Welcome to the Higher Balance Advanced Technique course, Mindstorm, Disc 1.
We always hear these ancient stories, you know, whether they be biblical stories or stories that are considered folklore or fairy tale or ancient tribes or American Indian tribes. Everybody has mystical stories. The real question is we wonder sometimes, are these stories true and what's not true? I often get a kick out of religious people who would laugh at mystical stories about other cultures, but then they believe, you know, somebody might have walked on water or did these certain things, so it's okay for their belief system, but not other belief systems, and they firmly believe in other things, and but selectively not others. The bottom line is I think that there's a good amount of truth to these mythical stories, and I think that there's also a lot of stretching of the facts and the truth. And you know, what we're focusing on here is weather manipulation and what took place or how did they achieve it or how can somebody achieve it, and that's what we're going to try to focus on right now. So do I believe it's possible to affect and manipulate the weather? Absolutely I do. Do I think it's a task that can be performed randomly and easily? No, and I'm going to explain why that is, and hopefully it'll make a lot of logic. And on the same token, I'm going to also teach people to go out and you know, hopefully be able to achieve it. And I'm pretty confident with trial and error that they will be able to achieve it.
What would be this the spiritual benefit of manipulating the weather?
Well, you know, sometimes, you know, you have to ask yourself, does everything have to relate to being spiritual? I think there's a lot of people who really aren't necessarily interested in just the spiritual aspect, but other things. And my answer to somebody who would say, well, if it doesn't relate spiritually, what good is it? And I would say, well, you know, living life is about spirituality. Existing and being a part of this world is about spirituality. So any other interaction that's above normal, I think is definitely a form of spirituality, and it's an aspect. If you can say that you can look at a tree and understand it, and if you really were to in-depthly look at the tree, you could find God, okay? Well, that's an expression. That's you know, but there's a truth to it also. You know what I'm saying? But it's how deeply can you look? You can look at a sunrise or a tree. You know, I've often said to you that at certain points there are frequencies that are dispersed, and if you catch it at the right time and you see it, you feel like you've been fed. Do you see what I'm saying? And I believe this is in some of the other material I've taught, which is absolutely critical information. Well, it's to say that, you know, if you can affect weather to some degree, one, what are your limits and what are the possibilities? But more so, what does that say about your communion that you're having with reality or with life or with Gaia consciousness or with the elements around you? To me, that is a very spiritual state of mind. When you think again about, of course, you know, I'll use an example, you know, with somebody that I believe is a spiritual master, but that everybody will think of, and that would be, you know, Jesus. When he was out on this you know, ship in the middle of a storm, I mean, he affected the weather. I mean, he didn't just go two snaps and it just dissipated. Do you know what I'm saying? He basically was sleeping through a lot of it, and I think the men came down panicking and woke him up, and he said, you know, calm down, take it easy, more or less. And he went up there, and it was coming down really hard rain and gusting and wind and maybe lightning and black clouds, and, you know, he looked at it, and he just kind of did his thing and worked with the storm. I mean, it wasn't just, you know, like that. Well, something happened. The real question is, what happened? Now, a lot of people need to think about something that Jesus said, because I don't necessarily would put it in a certain context that Jesus selectively only could do these things, and a lot of people think that way, and I would say to them that, you know, he did say, you can do as I can do and even greater. So this is not just in the fact of reaching out to other people in that belief system and bringing them over to this level of the thinking for that time. But I think it also meant, you know, the fact that he would teach his students to try to heal and to do other things. And he really believed in that conviction. Okay? So my point is that, you know, what one man can do, another can do. And that's the biggest thing to remember, is that if you want to rise to that occasion, you can.
You're talking about what Jesus did as far as communion with the weather, rather than what they said that he said and the wave stops.
Mm-hmm. But my point was is that he didn't just snap his fingers. Something happened. And if he's a representation to millions of people, per se, of what spirituality is, well, that was an act of something that we all esteem to be like. We want to be like him. We want to be like Buddha. We want to be like Krishna. I mean, isn't that the point of it? So if this person was communing with this giant storm to quell it, to calm it, okay, the point is, he didn't get a cell phone out and talk to God in the sense, or maybe he did, maybe you could say God did, but I don't think that. I mean, he looked up to the storm, according to the storm. There was this calming effect that slowly happened. Just didn't just zip open like a giant Ziploc and the sun popped out. You know, there was a kind of something happening there, a progress. Something was happening with him, something was happening with the storm, something then was the third byproduct, again coming back to three. So to your question, you know, how is it spiritual? I think this really addresses that fact, that all aspects of life, how we integrate with it, can very much be spiritual. You know, as long as you're not suppressing or harming or doing wrong to somebody, I mean, I think that the bottom line is that you can find a form of beauty, and all forms of beauty are a form of finding your spirituality, in my opinion.
You're mentioning Jesus, but I also heard other stories about ancient tribes that do rain dance.
Yes. You have your American Indians who would do rain dances. I believe you can find it in almost any culture. You'll find a variation of different things. You'll hear in ancient, I think from Nordic, to bringing down the fog so they could go into battle and stuff and not be seen. The same thing goes for Arthurian tales from England, per se. You have, I mean, it just goes on and on and on. I think anybody can really look into it. So the real question is, if there is a sliver of truth to this, what is it, how was it done, and how can one redo it? And that's what we're going to cover here. And there are plenty of people here who have seen me do different things, from cloud bursting, perhaps, to creating weather changes or stopping and starting rain. I mean, literally what one would be considered modern day miracles. But my point is it's not just me. I've taught other students to do these things. I think the biggest thing that you're going to have to keep in mind, and I'm going to stress this, is that when you go out and you try to work with these things, you want to do it by yourself. And the reason is if you have more than one person and they know what you're doing, that's the trick, or they know how to do it if they're listening to this course, there is a conflict of interest, because they themselves then are going to try to manipulate the weather. And it's like a canceling effect. Well, you know, if you get one stick and one wants to throw it in one way and the other one wants to throw it the other, here's a big problem. But here, let me give you a better one. What if they both decide to throw the stick in the same direction? Doesn't that common sense tell us that that's not as easy as it sounds? I mean, think about two people picking up a stick and throwing it. Couldn't one person do a lot better than the two together? Do you follow what I'm saying? Some people might think, well, it might go farther if two people throw it. Well, there's some kind of thing with synchronicity there. So when you have other people trying to do these things with you, what happens is that it's not that they're trying to intentionally do something bad. It's just that it's as if, you know, it's like the universe can't figure out which one to respond to first, or Gaia, or the energies that are relating. You know, or it's having a pet and both people are clapping their hands going, here, doggy, and it's just confused. So either instead of one or the other getting a response, maybe one will get it, maybe they're more powerful or more directed, but it's still going to create this little bit of chaoticness, per se. So when you do this kind of work, you certainly want to go off and try to do it on your own at first. You can bring people with you, but they don't need to know the formula of how you're doing it. Let them be the witnesses to the act, the witnesses to what they're going to experience. You can tell them, this is what I'm going to do. Like I do, I often tell people, well, okay, or if somebody might ask me to do something, I'll do it. I don't like to perform for others. I have a big pet peeve about that. When I feel close enough to students, I will do certain things for them and you know, teach them certain things that they can witness and experience it. But, you know, you will find that a lot of people will want to put you under pressure if you make claims. And you're going to find that when you're under pressure and there's a certain kind of expectation, that is also going to limit your ability. So again, you know, you don't want to get into those circumstances where, you know, you have that, because you now get into this collective mind consciousness of being doubted or challenged, and this is a thought wave also. Okay? Not to mention now that you have this mind, as we were talking about earlier, where, you know, you're trying not to think about something, but like Tourette's, the person can't govern that, and they start to have all these bad words pop out of their head. We often have a lot of control, or many people do, on controlling their thoughts. So your fear is, well, what if I can't do it? What if I'm not going to be able to do it? What if they don't believe me? What if they call me a fraud because I couldn't do it right? And this in itself is going to erode your effectiveness. Do you follow what I'm saying? Now, you might say, well, if you can do it when you're by yourself, why can't you do it when you're with other people? You know, it's about the technique. It comes from a place that is not of brain thinking. And this is a lot of what I've covered before. It is such a clear state of consciousness that it takes practice to hold your mind there. And so when you have something very demanding on your brain, your babbler, it's like throwing wood into the engine. It's just firing up the engine to where this babbler is just taking over, and it's making very hard, a lot of difficulty for you to hold your mind in that steady place to create that. Do you follow what I'm saying? Now, when you have what I would say are believers, well, believers are kind of have this anticipation that they believe in the power of this person. So of course the non-believers go, well, they're brainwashed, they don't know what they're talking about, they're, you know, they're seeing things or hypnotized, whatever. But the point is they can act as a catalyst almost, because their minds are clear. They're working with you. They fully expect for this to happen. You're the operator, you create it, and therefore you get a better effect. And this is what was done in many cases for spiritual masters. So when you get into doubting people, in many cases psychics can't do anything under closed doors. It's as if their mind is babbling too much, in my opinion, or there's this inner fear of error. And I think a lot of parapsychologists now are discovering this, and they're talking about that. It's almost as if I would say it would be better to secretly observe, and I hate saying that, and record, than it is to let them know that they're going to be secretly observed and recorded. You know, in the back of your mind, there's that babbler then preventing you from going into what I would call a slipstream state of mind, or the in-between state of mind, which we just recorded. It would be very difficult if you were under this kind of pressure.